Analysis: Iran's day after Khamenei, succession or survival? Khamenei prepared for his death since the June war with Israel, while Iran's capacity to replace him and fight a prolonged war of attrition may push Trump to make do with tangible military achievements. But as a vacuum forms, different groups are vying for power, which may put the regime in danger. By Zvi Burrell. The Iranian confirmation that Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, was killed in Saturday's attack opens a range of options for the regime, but it does not yet change the fundamental question regarding its future. The joint U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran, which includes hitting military targets such as missile bases, launchers and missile production plants, nuclear sites, symbols of government and top regime officials, does not yet indicate where Trump is heading. Is the intent to defeat the existing regime so that it admits its route and agrees to all the demands made by the United States and Israel? Or is the objective to eliminate the existing system of government and make way for a new regime and leadership? The first option affords the existing leadership the opportunity to quickly appoint a new supreme leader, as well as some chance to save itself and continue in its role after agreeing to a deal of surrender with the United States. The second option envisions the generation of an exciting new political revolution in which some alternative leadership takes over and hurries to sign a peace agreement with the United States and possibly with Israel, thereby creating a new Middle East. According to Iranian media reports, last June, following the 12-day war, Khamenei began preparing, appointing a three-man committee to recommend a successor in the event he dies or is assassinated. It is unknown who the supreme leader's preferred candidate was. One option that was taken off the table was President Ibrahim Raisi, who was killed in a helicopter crash. Other names floated included his son, Mojtaba, who does not possess a suitable religious stature, and Sadegh Larijani, head of the judiciary and brother of Ali Larijani, Secretary of the National Security Council, who became the most senior authority after Khamenei. Even the name of Hassan Rouhani, the former president who holds the highest religious rank, was raised. Constitutionally, the choice of a successor falls under the authority of the Assembly of Experts, an elected body of 88 members, many of whom see themselves as qualified for the position. In practice, selecting a successor, especially after such a long tenure, is expected to become a political battleground between conservatives and radicals, as well as with the Revolutionary Guards, who will want to ensure a leader of their liking. The outcome of the selection will determine the direction of the regime and the fate of the war. Up to the beginning of the offensive, it appeared, at least according to his declarations, that Trump was striving to reach a deal with the existing leadership, the gist of which was the total cessation of uranium enrichment on Iranian territory and the implementation of invasive monitoring that would ensure that Iran never strove to develop nuclear weapons. These were the code words Trump set as a condition for continuing the diplomatic process. Two rounds of talks held by the two sides, one in Oman and the second in Geneva, apparently failed to lay down a sufficiently solid basis for believing that a third round, supposed to have been held in Geneva this week, would produce quick and realistic results. Despite the optimistic spirit relayed by Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, Iran gave no hint as to whether it would be proposing further concessions that would have prevented an attack. Like in its previous American wars against Iraq, Afghanistan, or Venezuela, now too it turned out that a display of force on its own, large as it may be, was not enough to convince a dictatorial regime of the seriousness of an American president's intentions. A limited operation, the preparation of which was reported by American media outlets, would also have been insufficient, since there was no certainty that such an operation would not escalate into a multi-arena campaign that would have led to total war. At this stage, Iran has expanded the scope of its responses beyond the expected attacks against Israel. It has launched missiles at Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia, but as far as is known, these were aimed at American bases and targets, or at targets used for military operations, such as airports, but not at civilian or state targets, or gas installations, or other civilian infrastructure in these countries. Iran has not yet taken direct action to close maritime commercial traffic in the Persian Gulf. Reports of a closure of the Strait of Hormuz are waiting for confirmation. So far, Iran has not appealed to its proxies in Iraq, Lebanon, and Yemen to open secondary fronts. Iran is thereby sending a clear signal regarding the intent of the threat is issuing to its neighbors, without opening a full-fledged front against them yet. It's too early to assess how the Iranian reaction will unfold in the coming days, and this will depend on the way it interprets the American attack and its goals. In other words, if Iran's working assumption is that the system of regime itself, and not just senior political and military officials, are in the United States' gun sights, and that the Islamic Revolution may lose its historic role, Iran may embark on a large-scale war. In contrast, if it realizes that there is a chance of leaving the regime intact in exchange for concessions, even vital ones, it may try to resume the diplomatic channel through the mobilization of its Arab neighbors who, despite the attacks on several of them, have not yet expressed willingness or a wish to take part in an American-Israeli war or to establish the anti-Iranian axis which served as the base for the older paradigm adopted by former American administrations. A willingness to make concessions under fire, or what was described by Khamenei once as a heroic flexibility, is like a poisoned chalice from which Khamenei was ready to taste. But even an Iranian decision to embark on total war is not a path devoid of mines and challenges that could topple the regime. Beyond Iran's limited military capabilities in comparison to American and Israeli ones, decision makers in Iran are not all cut from the same cloth. The army, the Revolutionary Guards, the Basij militias and the police are subordinate to guidelines set by the Supreme Leader, Khamenei or his successor. But these are organizations that hold immense economic assets that provide them with huge revenues, providing a livelihood for millions of people, alongside civilian or semi-civilian organizations that are directly or indirectly under their control. These organizations will strive to maintain their economic power no less than their military power, and at times of crisis, such as now, there is no certainty that all of them will act according to edicts of the Supreme Leader and not in a way that protects themselves. They may even suggest solutions on their own to arrive at private arrangements with the United States. It's worth noting that the issue of the Army's allegiance was one of the factors that led to the establishment of the Revolutionary Guards, an organization designed to protect and further the values of the revolution, which has developed into a parallel army that is better equipped and better funded than the state army. These organizations and mechanisms are more important than the people heading them. The assassination of senior advisors and commanders in the government, army, and the guards, such as the killing of Ali Shamkhani, Khamenei's most senior military advisor, a former defense minister who had been recently appointed to head Iran's defense council as part of a reform carried out by Khamenei in the decision-making apparatus, does not bring down the organizations these people headed. The nuclear program and its rehabilitation continued after the assassination of a long list of senior scientists. The Revolutionary Guards did not collapse after the killing of their commander Hossein Salami last June, and the army also continues to exist after the assassination of its commander Mohammed Bakri. However, hitting the senior ranks of commanders is not just a blow to morale. The cliché that every person has a replacement is not necessarily accurate. An example of this was Qasem Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force, who was killed in an American attack in 2020. Replacing Soleimani, who was a multitasking strategist who put together the Ring of Fire and who largely dictated Iran's foreign and nuclear policies, was Esmail Kahani, who turned out to be a colorless and unimaginative commander who needed help in translating to Arabic when meeting pro-Iranian militias commanders in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. It was recently reported that Khamenei had instructed that alternative senior commanders be appointed in case serial hits were launched at military leaders. One may assume that army and Revolutionary Guard units, as well as Iranian proxies, had detailed instructions on how to operate independently if their commanders are killed or if contact between them and headquarters in Tehran is disrupted or broken. This maneuvering allows the regime to turn the confrontation into a prolonged and extensive war of attrition, causing ongoing damage and extending combat to place before the United States and Israel a dilemma in which the value of continuing the war could be offset by the extent of regional damage it causes, while in the meantime extending the life of the regime. No less important in Iran's view is the impact a prolonged war of attrition will have on the chances of the protest movement being reawakened and operating to topple the regime while taking over its institutions. President Trump himself recommended that civilians stay home and protect themselves as long as the bombing raids continue. This warning is compounded by the unbridled iron fist the regime will employ against anyone daring to take to the streets to demonstrate. But even when the bombing stops, there will still be enough armed regime members left who could act with extreme violence against any organization and suppress any attempt to take over government institutions, proving to Trump that any help he proposes to give the protest movement causes massacres, and that the only opportunity for generations he is giving them will end in their death. Another concern that threatens the resumption of the protests lies in the extent of innocent civilians being killed by American and Israeli bombing raids, which will be exploited by the regime for showing that the war is not a gift the United States is granting the Iranian people, but a war targeting it, and that only national solidarity can save the nation against Western imperialist plots. On this backdrop, and as long as no alternative leadership is in sight for implementing the list of military and political goals of this war as presented by Trump in his speech, the American president may make do with immediate and measurable tangible military achievements so that he can declare victory. A systematic thinning of Iran's military capabilities, mainly its ballistic missiles, and the completion of the total destruction of its nuclear installations are undoubtedly vital goals, whose attainment could significantly shrink the strategic threat posed by Iran, that these do not ensure the replacement of the government.